Numerous fire trucks and firefighters are on the scene of a fire at an apartment complex east of downtown Missoula at this hour. Good evening, I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Missoula City firefighters continue at this hour to battle a large fire burning in the east floor of the Vantage Villa apartment complex on East Broadway. The fire broke out mid-afternoon and quickly spread to at least two third-floor apartments. It appears all the residents got out safely. Several fire trucks are on the scene, including a ladder truck hosing down the roof. The apartment complex is owned by the Missoula Housing Authority. Ellie Greenwood is with the Housing Authority's Resident Services and was in the complex when the fire broke out. She spoke with News Director Sally Mock a little while ago as they watched the smoke continue to pour out of the burning apartments. Greenwood says the residents are all elderly or disabled.
That's what's challenging about this situation, is just making sure that the people who are not mobile are out and that they're safe. So we're going through the roster, and we just thought of one more person that we need to check on, and we're all feeling pretty distraught about that. We just had a prayer circle for a dog that's inside, that's really making somebody just completely overwhelmed with grief. So we're
the dog's okay?
We don't know. The dog is still inside. It's a much-loved pet around here by many people.
The occupant of the apartments, but they're safe.
Yeah, everybody other than this one person that we're not quite sure if she's even in the apartment today is accounted for. So we had one guy come out by ladder. That was exciting, but scary. And we had, you know, people who get really triggered by panic and anxiety. So we're doing our best.
This would be distressing for anyone, but especially for folks who stress of any kind is pretty tough.
Yeah, it is really a challenging situation because, of course, also, you know, pretty much everybody here is either elderly or disabled. So people have a lot of things going through their minds, like where are their medications? We have one woman who is quite concerned because she got a brand new wheelchair. So she's really worried about getting that wheelchair out. And right now it sounds like it's mostly damage to the third floor apartments. It's really hard to imagine that it's only the third floor when you see that much smoke.
It is, though. I've been on the other side. It's so far,
you
it's contained to the third floor.
Okay, great. I'm glad you... I wasn't brave enough to go over there.
You'll have to find some alternative housing tonight, probably.
And I believe Elizabeth Marshall, who's the property manager, has already started working on getting hotel vouchers for everyone.
The cause of the fire is still under investigation, but it is believed to have started in a chair in one of the apartments. If you are headed out East Broadway this evening, be aware fire trucks are still on the scene and traffic is moving slowly.
And another news from around the state. An Idaho State police trooper shot and killed a motorist along Interstate 90 at Lookout Pass as sheriff's deputies struggled with a man over a gun. Kootenai County officials say the shooting occurred about noon yesterday, just west of the Idaho-Montana state line. The Shoshone County deputy was responding to a welfare check on the driver, whose car was parked in a turnout area. The trooper arrived to assist. The driver and the deputy struggled over the driver's gun, and the trooper shot the driver. The driver, a white man in his 20s, was taken to Shoshone Medical Center in Kellogg, where he was later pronounced dead. The man's car had Montana license plates. Both the deputy and the trooper were placed on administrative leave while the shooting is investigated. Neither officer was injured.
A Montana Department of Justice official says three children who were reported missing from the Blackfeet Indian Reservation have been found. Agency spokesman John Barnes says a tip led Flathead Tribal Police today to 8-year-old Ivan Redhorn III, 4-year-old Sarista Bullbear, and 1-year-old Ivana Redhorn. Barnes says the children are uninjured and are in the custody of Child and Family Services. Tribal officials say the three children were taken May 27th by their non-custodial parents. They said they believe 31-year-old Ivan Redhorn Jr. and Angelina Bullbear were in the Ronan or San Ignatius areas. It was not immediately clear where the children were found or whether any arrests have been made.
A recent legislative audit finds there are at least 64 Montana school bus drivers with criminal records, including two with drunken driving convictions within 3 years of the study. In addition, some school districts appear to be taking advantage of a reimbursement policy in which the larger the bus, the higher the payment rate per mile. Another district appeared to be padding its mileage, claiming a driver's route was twice as long as it really was. Those are among the findings in the school transportation funding and safety audit presented today to the Legislative Audit Committee. Auditors are recommending changes that include required background checks for bus drivers, examining the reimbursement rate system, and the use of global positioning systems in each bus to more accurately track their mileage.
The dispute over physician-assisted suicide is back in court as an organization seeks to have a state judge strike the Board of Medical Examiners policy on the practice. The board said last year it would evaluate complaints against doctors in assisted suicide cases on an individual basis, as it would any other medical procedure or intervention. Montanans Against Assisted Suicide demanded the board repeal its position, saying it implies that assisted suicide is legal in Montana. The board denied the petition in November. The group is asking District Judge Mike Manahan to overturn the denial. Attorneys for both sides in court yesterday to argue how much of the history of the debate should be included in Manahan's review. Oral arguments in the case are scheduled for September 30th.
Montana ranks 39th in the country for pay equity, and women in our state make only 67% of what men earn. That's below the national average, where women make 77 cents for every dollar men are paid. Governor Steve Bullock wants to close that gap, and today he announced a new Equal Pay for Equal Work task force charged with providing recommendations to ensure Montana workers earn equal pay for equal work, regardless of their gender.
It was 50 years ago when President Kennedy signed the Equal Pay Act into law. And that was a time when women were being paid 59 cents for every dollar that men were paid for the same work. You know, now we fast forward 50 years. We've made some progress, but clearly we still have a long way to go.
The task force will study the causes of Montana's wage gap, promote education and training opportunities for Montana women, and make recommendations to help close the gap. Bullock says Montana needs to make sure it has jobs where women and men alike earn a fair day's wage for a fair day's work.
You know, as the father of two young daughters and a son who fortunately aren't quite in the workforce yet, but I want to make sure that they're paid on their talents and abilities, and there's not either paid less because of gender or otherwise.
The Equal Pay for Equal Workforce Task Force is co-chaired by the Director of the Department of Administration, Sheila Hogan, and State Labor Commissioner Pam Busey. We'll have a feature interview with Busey about the task force work on Monday during Montana Evening Edition.
The Montana Public Service Commission is taking action to delay Montana's needs for a second area code. The PSC asked the Federal Communications Commission for a regulatory exemption that allows it to assign phone numbers to carriers in blocks of 1,000 instead of 10,000, delaying by at least a decade the need for a second area code in Montana. Lee Newspapers of Montana reports the FCC approved the request 3 weeks ago, and last week the PSC said it intended to adopt the new rules. It is allowing time for telephone companies to comment. PSC Chairman Bill Gallagher says the FCC chastised them for asking for the change too early, but he says delaying until at least 2028, the need for half the state to get a new area code saves money.
Various agencies are teaming up to research recreation patterns on the Blackfoot and Bitterroot Rivers. The study will be conducted by Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, the Bureau of Land Management, the Forest Service, and the University of Montana. FWP's Fishing Access Site Manager, Chet Krauser, says one thing is clear. People love to use our rivers, and more of us are using them.
What we're trying to figure out additionally now with some of our efforts is a better understanding of the types of use and the when, the where, all that kind of stuff, but then also how people assess their experience while they're out there. And that relates to levels of crowding or encounters with other floaters or what kind of experience they had and how much they enjoyed it, those kinds of things.
More with Krauser on tomorrow's Montana Evening Edition.
The common loon is a species of concern. It's not endangered or threatened, but researchers keep tabs on the population, hoping its status does not take a dive. A sizable portion of Montana's loon population lives in Glacier, and the park enlists citizen scientists each year to count them. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry takes us loon spotting with some citizen scientists.
On a recent training session for the loon monitoring program, a class heads out to a lake where loons have been spotted. The lake is outside Glacier Park, but near to West Glacier and the Crown of the Continent Research Learning Center, which runs the citizen science program. Participants are carrying observation sheets, binoculars or spotting scopes, and tripods. They scan the lake's surface and along the shoreline looking for the dark head of the common loon. Janice Swanson of Whitefish says she read about the program in the paper.
The loon behavior I was interested in, I've been seeing a lot of loon around the Flathead Valley, so I wanted to know what their questions were, what they're looking for, and so as long as I'm out, I'll be a scientist and help them out.
Jamie Belt coordinates the citizen science program and says one of the key things they teach about loons is the behavior and sounds they make when feeling distressed.
They use a tremolo call, which is a really common call that you hear used in Hollywood movies, kind of this warbling sounding call that sort of is used to denote this peaceful lake setting. And what it really means is that it's a loon that is disturbed or distressed for some reason.
Belt says Glacier has about 20 to 25% of the state's common loon population. She says chicks are the most important thing they ask the citizen scientists to monitor.
When you think of a place like Glacier where we have 45 suitable habitat lakes that loons could inhabit and potentially breed on, you would think that, you know, and two chicks is typical per pair, so you might think that we'd have quite a few chicks, but on average we have about 6 or 7 per year. So each individual chick is really important to the continuation of the population.
Belt says they're monitoring lakes that are at least 7 acres in size and no higher than 5,500 feet in elevation. She says the size has to do with making sure the loons find enough fish and aquatic invertebrates for them and any chicks they have to eat.
And then the elevation restriction of 5,500 feet or lower is that if there's ice for too long on the lakes, then it's not going to provide a long enough breeding season for the young chicks to grow big enough so that they're ready to migrate off into their wintering areas.
Adult loons in summer have a black head and bill, a black and white spotted back, and a white breast. The Crown of the Continent Research Learning Center receives funding from the Glacier National Park Conservancy. However, with 45 lakes, many of them only accessible by hiking in, Belt says the citizen scientists help cover the territory and expand the amount of information they can collect about the birds. Belt says they started a citizen science loon monitoring program in 2005. She urges caution as people approach a lake in order to not spook the loons out of their nests.
So one of the things that can happen when loons are disturbed is that they leave the nest in haste, and they have these really big webbed feet that are great for their aquatic diving lifestyle, but they can get in the way of peacefully leaving a nest without kicking the eggs off into the water. So that can cause a complete nest failure.
Belt says another problem is if the loons get scared away from their nest and leave the eggs too long, leaving them vulnerable to predators and getting chilled. Nests are usually within 4 feet of the water's edge, but they're camouflaged and pretty much impossible to see unless a loon is sitting in the nest. Self-described common loon intern Taylor Hansen with the Research Learning Center says another danger to chicks and grown loons comes in the form of lead from fishing gear.
You go fishing and you lose a lure or something, and the lead weights on them, they fall down into the pebbles, and what happens is loons, like with many birds, is they go down and they scoop up small rocks, and that helps them digest the food that they're eating. And along with that, they take in the lead weights, which they end up digesting, and even just something as small as a pencil eraser can kill an adult loon in a few weeks.
Glacier Park has a ban on lead fishing gear, but that does not extend outside of the park.
So I think it's up to you.
Oh, there it is again.
Okay.
It's a loon.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
Spotted through a scope trained on the far end of the lake is a white feathered bird, black head with a black and white checkered back, and a black and white necklace of feathers circling its neck. Belt says two loons were spotted at this lake recently, demonstrating courting behavior. It's possible this loon is out fishing while the other sits on a nest. Belt says each year they have about 150 citizen scientists keeping track of loons as they hike in Glacier Park. She says it gets more boots on the ground than they could afford, but it also gives people a chance to connect with the park by contributing to the research. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
The solace offered by open spaces and beautiful landscapes is part of what prompted the formation of 2009 of Portland-based nonprofit organization known as the Vet Voice Foundation. The foundation is made up of veterans working for land conservation to, in their words, ensure that future generations of veterans will return to a country that provides space for hunting, camping, hiking, and exploring that has helped heal the physical and emotional wounds of war for this generation. Marine veteran and University of Montana student Jesse DeRozier is a member of the group and was in Washington, D.C. recently to lobby for land preservation. In tonight's feature interview, he will talk with news director Sally Mock about the foundation and about his own journey from growing up Blackfeet and Browning to serving his country.
We own some land right out of town, 40 acres where I grew up, rode horses all my life, and got to experience some of the country life.
And you also went to the Blackfoot Language School there that Darryl Kipp started, right?
Yes, ma'am. I attended that school from third grade all the way up until eighth grade, learning my Blackfoot language, and it was a great opportunity for me. And one of the things I'm most proud of is to say I'm a student of my language and know how to speak my language.
There are fewer and fewer of you who do speak Blackfoot, right?
Yes, ma'am.
It's important to keep that language going because?
Well, the language is the base of our foundation of our people. You know, without a language, there's really no culture or history to the people, in my eyes. You know, in anthropology, we learned that language is the vehicle which drives the culture. And without our language, we are no different from any other tribe or any other people of this great nation. That's what makes us. Is our language.
And what did learning Blackfoot teach you about your culture that you maybe didn't know before you learned the language?
Well, it just opened my eyes to all the history that we have here in Montana, the different names that we have for certain places or things here in Montana.
Which are very descriptive.
Very descriptive in our language. And a lot of times the name will tell a story or go back to a story of where it came from or describing an object more deeper than what the English language can do. And I think our native language really opened my eyes to another world and connected me to this place in the earth.
Can you give me an example of a place that is that descriptive?
Yes, for example, the lake, St. Mary's Lake, in right near the Glacier National Park in northwestern Montana. In our language, we call it Bachtom Sikimi, which means hole at the bottom of the lake. Now, early translation of this was never understood until scientists realized that there's a natural spring underneath the lake, and it almost seems to be a bottomless lake. But there's no explanation on how my people known that, so the name says it all right there. And without the names of certain things, we kind of forget where they came from or what the deeper meaning is.
Hole at the bottom of the lake.
Hole at the bottom of the lake.
I like that. When you graduated from high school in Browning, you joined the service, the Marines. What made you decide to do that?
Well, joining the service is a long tradition in my family. My father was a Vietnam era vet, and my grandfather was a World War II veteran, and his father was in the military, as well as my grandfather on my mother's side. I have around three uncles who have served, my younger brother and my first cousin all have served. Native Americans have the highest percent per capita of any minority in the U.S. Armed Forces. And Montana has the highest percent per capita for veterans in any state in the U.S. So we're very proud of that and very proud to serve our country.
Do you think that's part of what is historically a warrior tradition among Native Americans, or why?
Yes, I agree with that. I believe that Native American people have defended this homeland for hundreds of years pre-1492, and we continue to do so to this day. It's not much of a surprise in my eyes, really. Coming from a reservation, you know, you don't have a lot of choices, it seems like, and serving the military is just a great opportunity to experience the world and to do something for the better of everyone.
So there are economic reasons, obviously, too. Not a lot of jobs when
yes,
you graduate
ma'am.
From high school.
Yes, ma'am. As well as veteran issues, Native Americans struggle as well. High unemployment rates on the reservation, and veterans have high unemployment rates. Stress, PTSD is common. Right now in the military, the number one cause of death is suicide. And with Vet Voice, what I'm working with, a big issue is conservation, you know, and a lot of people don't consider all the veterans and how we can heal ourselves when we get back. You know, as Montanans, we're ready to serve and ready to join, but when we get back, it's kind of like we're lost, you know. We have a high dropout rate in college and high unemployment rate, but with the conservation issues, we have a chance to experience the outdoors and nature and the soothing. I think nature really soothes your soul, you know. It calls to a lot of people and calms you down, so it's an important thing to keep, you know.
You mentioned Vet Voice. That is the Vet Voice Foundation. This is a relatively new foundation. I think it was formed in 2009, based in Portland. And the goal of the foundation is to preserve land in this country, in part because of what you say, which is that it's very important to have that space. Where do you go? Where do you find solace?
I find solace in many various places here in Montana. I'm always excited to find new areas, but mostly I like to hang out in the Rocky Mountain Front Glacier National Park right off my reservation. Chief Mountain is a sacred mountain for all my people, and I go there for solace a lot. My family also owns some land in White Sulphur Springs, where I go in the mountains and hunt and fish and hang out, and just the calmness of the outdoors is really soothing, I think, and really relaxing for me. Sometimes you get kind of clustered around a lot of people around the city life, and it's good to get out and escape. And that's what one of the wonderful things about Montana is, we do have these areas that we can go camping and fishing and hiking. And there's a lot of great places around here in Missoula as well that I enjoy to hike.
You're in college now here at the University of Montana. How'd you decide to go to college after the service?
Well, after I got out, I bounced around from different jobs, working a lot as a laborer, you know, long hours. And I realized I believe I could do better, you know. I believe I could. I wanted to be a boss or something. And I noticed that a lot of times that's all that separates is that is that piece of paper, that degree. So I realized I better refocus and go into school and try to get an education first before I step back out in the job world. I just finished my first semester here at the University of Montana. I loved it, and I can't wait to continue on and pursue a degree and look forward to making a career in maybe possibly environmental studies so I can continue to renew.
You were in D.C. last week speaking to Montana's congressional delegation. How was that? Was that interesting?
That was great. It was a wonderful opportunity for me. I got to meet Senator Tester, Congressman Daines, and Senator Max Baucus, and they're all really great, really welcomed us in, great. It was a great opportunity, and they really took the issues that we had and really seemed focused on helping the veterans of Montana.
Well, I have been speaking with Jesse DeRozier, and Jesse is a student here at the University of Montana, Marine veteran and member of the Blackfeet Tribe, and also a member of the organization called Vet Voice Foundation, which is working to preserve lands across the U.S. Jesse, thanks so much.
Thank you, ma'am.
In tonight's weather forecast for west of the Divide, tonight expect mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Lows will be around 40 degrees. Tomorrow will also be cloudy with a chance of rain, showers, and thunderstorms with highs in the mid-60s. For central Montana tonight, it will be mostly cloudy. Scattered showers and thunderstorms are likely this evening with lows between 40 and 50 degrees. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and rain showers throughout the day. Highs will stick around 60 degrees. And for southwest Montana tonight, showers and thunderstorms are likely. Lows will be around 40 degrees. Tomorrow will also be mostly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Highs will stay around 60 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Dave Ditloff with the National Wildlife Federation.
The economic costs of the changing climate are all around us. One example: more intense storms are taking a toll on the nation's infrastructure. It is estimated that Superstorm Sandy alone caused $62 billion worth of damage. More intense storms are also causing extensive crop damage. Studies estimate that the increased temperatures will reduce crop yields for U.S. corn and soybeans by 30 to 82% by the end of the century. And corn crop losses due to excessive moisture caused by more flooding and intense rainstorms will likely double in the next 30 years. causing $3 billion worth of losses each year. Here at West, the costs associated with wildfire are an important issue. Studies show that wildfires in the Rocky Mountain West are 4 times more frequent than they were before the 1980s, and the acreage burned is 6 times more. There are many reasons for this, but experts agree that the changing climate is a major factor. These more frequent and intense wildfires are expensive to fight. Here in Montana, it is estimated that a 1 degree Fahrenheit increase in summer temperatures would at least double the home protection costs associated with fighting wildfire, an increase of $28 million annually. Bark beetles are also causing significant costs to the state's economy. Western states are experiencing the largest bark beetle outbreak in recorded history. Here in Montana, we've lost 6.2 million acres of our forest to beetles. Much of this beetle outbreak is caused by the changing climate. Warmer winters are allowing beetles to better survive the cold months, and reduced soil moisture is making the trees more susceptible to the beetles. It is easy to see that Montana's outdoor economy will be impacted as the climate changes. The nearly 10 million annual visitors to Montana account for 43,000 jobs and an economic impact of $2.75 billion annually. Fishing, hunting, and wildlife viewing alone bring in more than $1 billion worth of economic activity each year to the state. Unfortunately, the changing climate will impact this economic driver. Take our trout fishing as an example. Higher summer temperatures, lower late summer stream flows, and more wildfires will significantly impact our world-renowned trout fisheries. Already, the Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, in order to protect the state's fisheries, has been forced to close fishing on certain waters during some hot summer weeks in recent years. The same goes for Yellowstone National Park. But more wildlife than trout are threatened by climate change. Studies are showing that most waterfowl and most big game species are at risk by some factor of the changing climate. Just a few months ago, a study was released that showed elk, one of the more adaptable big game species, are being adversely impacted by shorter green-up periods during late spring and early summer in the Yellowstone area. Given all these significant economic costs, it is imperative that we act to address carbon emissions soon. Unfortunately, few policy changes are moving forward. Congress hasn't debated any serious comprehensive climate change legislation in years, and other than toughening the policy on gas mileage for automobiles, the Obama administration hasn't done much to reduce carbon emissions either. The president did talk about the importance of cutting our carbon output in his inauguration and State of the Union addresses earlier this year, but so far those words have not been followed up with action. A good start would be to move forward and finalize a proposal to create a tough carbon standard for new power plants. Last summer, the Obama administration proposed such a new source performance standard as part of its efforts to enforce the Clean Air Act. The proposal would require new utility-scale power plants to release less than 1,000 pounds of carbon dioxide per megawatt hour. It received a record 2 million public comments in support of it. Power plants account for a third of the carbon emissions in the country. A carbon standard for new power plants that come online would be a good first step towards reducing our carbon emissions and tackling the huge economic and environmental costs associated with the changing climate. Despite its importance and the overwhelming public support for it, the proposed new standard seems to be sitting on a shelf with no timetable for action. Unfortunately, the coal industry seems to be doing a full court press against it, with a well-funded PR campaign full of mistruths. The truth is that the new rule would only apply to new power plants, not existing ones. The truth is that the low price of natural gas is what is limiting the coal industry in the last few years, not federal clean air regulations. The truth is that coal-fired power plants and their carbon emissions create staggering economic and environmental costs, not forward-thinking economic development. We don't want to pass on the costs of climate change to our kids and grandkids. We need to act to cut carbon emissions now. The new source performance standard would be a solid move in the right direction. President Obama should move forward with it. This is Dave Ditloff, Regional Representative with the Montana Office of the National Wildlife Federation. Thank you.
Dave Ditloff is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetich. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.